Welcome to The Gauge, a new podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group, bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and plan to bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets. Your host today is Green Gauge CEO Sean Kiernan, who is in the studio with Lord Holmes of Richmond MBE. Chris Holmes is a prominent advocate for blockchain for the public good in the House of Lords, as well as elsewhere, and today he speaks to Sean about championing blockchain in Parliament, how fintech could open up routes to support the levelling up agenda, and the key challenges surrounding funding for UK SMEs.
I'm really excited here today on The Gauge to have Chris, if I may, Lord Holmes, who's a bit of a hero of mine in the crypto space. He's very well known in Parliament for his work with our space, and I thought to just kick off actually with a very warm welcome.
It's very kind. Pleasure to be here.
Green Gauge has been working a lot with the APPG blockchain, of which you are a co-chair, and you've been banging the drum really for quite a few years. We've done some research around parliamentary mentions of DLT blockchain, and you were top of the pile. Obviously, this is a personal interest and a passion, but do you think that the interest is growing on both the Lords and MPs? And if there's any people in particular we should be looking out for besides your valid contributions?
Thank you for saying that. It's extremely kind. The interest is definitely growing. If I think back to when I was preparing my 2017 report into distributed ledger technology for public good, there weren't really many open brackets, any close brackets, mentions of blockchain, particularly across either house. But now, some 5 years on, it's much more understood by certain members and much more discussed. I think it was fantastic that only 3 weeks ago there was a whole debate on cryptocurrencies and what we may need to do as a nation for that. And more generally, people in the Commons such as Martin Doherty Hughes, Lisa Cameron, obviously John Glenn as former EST, and indeed Rishi and Philip Hammond as previous chancellors. Up my end in the Lords, Tony St John and others are interested, contributing and connecting in this space. There's still a lot more to be done. We need, in Parliament, as in wider society, more people to be engaging with this space, to understand more about the opportunities. They don't need to understand the underlying technology particularly, but to understand the potential, and I say potential solutions, but is it a different space from when I first started talking about this? No question.
And thank you for all the work you've been doing to help educate and raise awareness. Some of those names you've just mentioned are really big names. I think most people in the UK will have heard of them. And it's great to hear also that there's cross-bench participation. You mentioned two names in the SNP, so I think that's a fantastic move. In terms of the next steps to create champions, if you will, obviously the current administration is looking at our sector with interest as part of the fintech growth story. Are there any particular efforts that we as a community from the sector can help to raise awareness and education and help your efforts in Parliament?
I think you put your finger on exactly what we all need to do, and that's connecting this technology to the current difficulties and the current opportunities that face the country. It makes complete sense to have fitted blockchain into the levelling up agenda. For levelling up, now read across to growth. The phrases change, but the issues, the problems and the opportunities remain often stubbornly the same. And there is a key role for blockchain and other emerging new frontier technologies, whichever one chooses to call them, to be considered, to be proofed, to be piloted, to be scaled. I think if people are perhaps still relatively new to these technologies, the key is really to consider what they can do to solve the problems of the day and to conceive of them as tools. Not to undermine them by saying that, but to contextualize them, that they are tools and they're tools in our human hands. We need to lead on this stuff. We need to explain. We need to connect. We need to collaborate. We need to create. We need to develop. We need to deploy with these new tools. They are phenomenally more powerful than the flint. But in terms of what we choose We are the humans. We need to lead on this. And if we don't make a success of these new technologies, that will not be a failure of the technologies. That will be a failure of us as humans.
It's a very interesting angle. And I mean, I've heard a lot of people, when you say, for example, not necessarily blockchain, but crypto, there's quite an emotive response, bad or good. Whereas I think what you're outlining, and which I heartily agree with, is it's a technology. And ultimately, a technology is neither a moral good or bad. It's what we do with it that makes it something interesting.
For sure. And it's interesting that people suggest that the technology isn't neutral.
Mm.
But in essence, it is. The fact that it has been structured and deployed in particular ways, which make it non-neutral, that is a human intervention, a human development, a human deployment of that technology. But of itself, technology has nothing to say on economics, psychology, social theory, philosophy, morals, values. It has nothing to say on that. It's what we do with our interaction and our deployment of the technology. And it's one of my key reasons why I got heavily involved in this space in the first instance, because it was clear at the time that Bitcoin and blockchain were used interchangeably. And for many people, even today, there's a sense that those two things are one and the same. They're not. And it's beholden on all of us to make it clear that they're not and why they're not, and then to open up all of those potential possibilities from blockchain, because otherwise they may never get the opportunity to get off the ground, because it would be killed off by just seen as a speculative, a Ponzi, insert whatever word has been used out there.
I think that's very much the voice of reason and very welcome. And some of the things that you're working towards, obviously, are the good side, if you will, of implementing the technology. You mentioned leveling up. I'd be very curious to hear your thoughts how these technologies could support the idea of leveling up, and maybe a tag I'm trying to come up with, which is the digital road to the regions of capital.
Beautifully put, and I think that's absolutely right, because for decades, if not since the beginning of time, we have had a systemic problem with funding, with lines of credit to SMEs, with the question of geography, with the question of demography, what we can do through human deployment of such technologies is really address these problems in real time, in being able to reconsider issues such as risk, which doesn't then mean we're increasing risk, not at all. It's an ability to reconsider and evidence risk and have an approach through the deployment of these technologies, which enables far more people, far more, particularly S as well as MEs, to develop, to do what they're best at, and that is running, growing their businesses, creating employment, creating opportunities broader, connecting into those local communities up and down the country. And the reality is we're now at a moment where it's a must rather than a might. Perhaps, and probably a few years ago, people in Whitehall may have considered these new technologies and thought, that's all very interesting, but what has that got to say to me about running my department, business as usual? Now, as everybody out there knows, it would be fair to say we're in a bit of a fix. And it's not suggesting that there's a miracle solution, nor that there needs to be a miracle solution. But now what we must do is look to all of the ways to deploy and to test all of these technologies. And part of that absolutely is to the ability to get funding in a considered, a reimagined way into the hands, not least of people who are trying to grow their businesses right now up and down the country.
I think that financial inclusion message is one that, I mean, you're well known for making very clear to what we as an industry can do and what needs to be done. If we think again of blockchain perhaps as an instrument to democratize finance and consider the roots that we see today, where I think there's various figures touted of the $22 billion funding gap for SMEs by the Bank of England. And I've seen quite a few, many larger figures. And we look at the agenda of not just the current administration, but something I think we can all support of growth and getting money to the backbone economy, which is SMEs. When we look at the financial inclusion message, if we look at disparities in gender or ethnicity or different types of background, and we look at the sources of capital as they're currently presented, we often see that more democratized sources of finance are perhaps more fair too. Crowdcube, one of the biggest crowdfunding platforms, is almost 50-50 male-female. We look at VC apportioning of funds, male-female, venture capital funds disproportionately go to men. Do you think that there is really a story that if we democratize, and we've heard a lot about Web3, and I think we could talk about that if you wish, but this idea of opening up access to finance using these new technologies, do you think that's something that's understood in Parliament? Do you think that's something that we could be speaking a bit better on? Or what are your thoughts?
I think it's an absolutely essential message, and we can never say it enough and continue to say it and to say it in every conversation that we may happen to be in. It's such an important message because we live, fortunately, fabulously, in a really diverse nation, but still in so many ways, opportunity just isn't there to marry up with all that talent that absolutely is, and all too often unrealised. So your comparison between peer-to-peer and VC is very well made, and it's time to change that, not just because it's the right thing to do, which it is, but because it makes economic, social, it makes political sense to do that. There's no downside to doing it. It's all upside, and it needs to be all of our focuses. And I think in many ways, what Helen Disney said in the first of these podcasts, and ultimately what is blockchain, what is this? It's really community of interests gathered around a particular purpose. So in reality, we should talk to those purposes, be it financial inclusion, be it broader SME funding, whatever it is. That's completely the right way to approach these technologies and approach the solutions that we can bring to bear with people at the heart of it. Because we've just, frankly, we're wasting talent and we're wasting time right now. We don't need to do that. We can't afford to do that. And it's beholden on all of us that we stop doing that.
I think that's beautifully put. And I completely agree. I think it's just good business, actually, if we look after people that need capital and are hungry for it. Hopefully, in turn, they'll do what entrepreneurs do and make good of it. You're involved in a number of different frontier technologies. Blockchain is one of your passions, but a few others. Obviously, the APPG for the fourth industrial revolution is one of your passions as well. Could you talk to how you see this fourth industrial revolution and what role blockchain plays in unfolding that?
It has to be the combining, the converging, the coming together of a number of these technologies, always put to a specific particular problem and or opportunity. And even going to some more core principles which underpin that, the truth of it is, if we think about the column inches written about, the broadcast reels done on, AI has been the poster person for the new technologies for a long, long while. And yes, there's a lot that can be achieved, obviously, through what is probably often better described as machine learning. But the reality is, it's going to be the combination of these technologies with the human at the heart, with the human leading, but also crucially understanding issues such as digital ID and coming up with effective human-led solutions there. Because if we don't have an effective, federated, distributed digital ID, we're not going to realise more than but part of the opportunities which come through these technologies. It's always good to quote a consultancy. Why don't we choose McKinsey for today's stat? Yeah, they said by 2030 in the UK, if we had an effective structured digital ID, that could do potentially 3 to 13% of GDP. with the majority of that going to individuals. Well, it doesn't necessarily matter whether it's 3 or 13 or 7 or 8%. All we need to know is that is a significant, that is more than a material increase in GDP. And hey, look out the window, we need that right now. So it's understanding all of the elements, all of the underpins, and how all of that can be connected and combined and positioned. Then you see, as I said earlier, how though ultimately they're tools, when put in combination, they can be transformational, human-led tools.
It's very exciting hearing this. And I think digital identity is something that I've been following very closely, I think, as an industry. It's one of these key building blocks to unlock, as you say, the fourth industrial revolution needs something fundamental to link a person to innovation. Obviously, it's notoriously difficult to create digital identity. But in practice, if we all have, for example, credit scores and driver's licenses, the pieces of the puzzle are nearly there. And one thing that I think, particularly with people like you at the helm, the UK stands in position globally to present itself for is a properly positioned governance mechanism around digital identity, as opposed to some other frameworks we've seen, third-party countries, which are perhaps less straightforward. Is this a space you think we have a chance to do something in with digital identity?
We certainly have a chance, and it's understanding how to position it in terms of autonomy and empowerment and the citizen, and it being my credentials in my hand, controlled by me. I determine how to deploy any particular element. I decide when to deploy. I decide who to deploy. So having that trustworthiness around it, then if we get those elements right, the critical importance, but always subsequent to those, of the economic benefits, which will undoubtedly flow from it, all come into play. There are some great examples where we should look to international efforts. In India, for example, they're doing some really interesting stuff on digital ID. Other nations where we should look at that, take the bits which can work, but not do a drag and drop, but do a sense of what are the principles here, what's the essence, what we're trying to achieve, and crucially understanding how to develop this in the social, political, and economic context of the United Kingdom. And that's where we'll make a success of it. And indeed, yeah, that goes to the heart of all of what we're talking about with these technologies. If something isn't understood in context, then you're making it pretty difficult for yourself to make a success of it.
I found this really illuminating. I could go on talking for hours with you, but is there anything you'd like to say in closing? I just wanted to say a big thank you from Greengage.
Not at all. It's an absolute pleasure. Really appreciate everything that you're doing as Greengage. And I guess in closing, just this, we all have a role to play in making a success of the fourth industrial revolution. Every single person has a role to play. We need to have that constant, in-depth, considered, real-time public engagement, public discourse, public debate, answering the question which people should legitimately ask robustly, what's in it for me? Why should I care about this stuff? As some people say, why should I go online? There's nothing there for me. What is all this technology? Am I being done to, or am I agent, active, and absolutely part of a community? And in short, if we get this right, there will be tremendous public benefit, individual benefit, private benefit derived from it, and we will be able to do nothing short of completely reimagining the very social contract between citizen and state.
Sounds like a dream. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you.